Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. Back in March, Christina Curtis was just shy of 2 months from graduation. Everything was on track for her to walk across the stage at Wayne State University's April commencement in Detroit.
Things seem like they're finally going to fall into place for me. I, throughout the fall and into the winter, had applied for at least 25 jobs in hopes that something would happen post-grad. I was in the process of finalizing a match with a fellowship to work at the state of Michigan, doing local economic development work.
And then the pandemic hit.
Then everything stopped because the state of Michigan instituted a hiring freeze and a round of budget cuts to ensure we could pay for the COVID-19 relief packages. The program I was going to work in was defunded, and the state put a hiring freeze in place, which meant that no other progress could be put forward in the matching process. So I was stuck.
Stuck, unable to finish her senior year, stuck, unable to launch her career, and stuck at home in Traverse City.
People always ask you, like, what is that next step? Where are you going? Where are you doing? What are you doing with your degree? And I got scared.
Scared because for the first time in her life, Christina says she didn't really have an answer to that question. What she did have, though, was a backup plan, grad school. So rather than working this fall, Christina will be at the University of Michigan. But that whiplash, a future dissolved and rearranged by the pandemic, well, that's something that college graduates across the country are feeling right now, perhaps more keenly than any other class in recent history. So today we're going to talk with members of the class of 2020 about their fears and hopes as they try to launch their lives in a world transformed by the coronavirus. And we'll start in New York City with Jonathan Ubi Gomez. He graduates from Lehman College, a City University of New York school located in the Bronx, later this month. Jonathan, welcome to On Point.
Thank you so much.
So first of all, let me double check. Graduation is going to happen later this month?
Graduation is happening next week. Yes, ma'am.
Next week. Well, congratulations to you. It must be a great relief and perhaps even feel like even more of an accomplishment given all that New York City and you have probably gone through in the past couple of months.
Indeed. It's been 10 years coming.
Wow, 10 years. So take me back, actually not even that long. Take me back like 5 months, Jonathan. What was your vision for your future? What were your plans?
I have a lot of side hustles. I think that's synonymous with New York. So I was working at a museum in downtown Manhattan. I was working campus life at Lehman College. And when the pandemic happened, I lost the job at the museum. They laid off all staff in visitor experiences and education. So myself and everyone else in the department. And then thankfully, my campus life job at Lehman College did not get terminated, but prospects for returning for a full-time position anywhere at the university was definitely put on hold as CUNY has a hiring freeze for this coming academic year.
Well, so let me ask you, so was that job that you had at the museum, the South Street Seaport Museum, was that did you want to continue that after graduation? I guess what I'm asking is what was your dream scenario?
Well, it was a fantastic job. It was a history museum, and I love everything that has to do with the arts. So it was definitely and I had started there as a summer, as a temporary job, but they had brought me back after the summer to stay on. So it was definitely a possibility to stay on after I graduated.
It was a possibility that you would stay on after you graduated, but is that what you wanted to do?
I think in a dream scenario would either be working there in some museum with related exhibitions, history or the arts, either that or working in campus life where I was working right now as well.
Got it. Okay. So given all that has happened in the past 3 months, what are you going to do now after you get your degree?
Oh, that's that's still in the air, I suppose. There's a lot of uncertainty, that's for sure. I think it's just taking it one day at a time, make sure what I do have in front of me, I do well. I'm still working at Campus Life, and in our office, we deal with a lot of emergency grants for students dealing with COVID-19. So just making sure I work as best as I can, helping my fellow students in my role and seeing where this takes me.
Are you going to stay in New York?
Definitely. I was born here. I grew up in Florida. I came back 3 years ago, and I don't see myself leaving anytime soon, God willing.
Well, New York is going to need people like you, right? As the city tries to get back on its feet here. Look, Jonathan, I keep thinking to myself, and I have over the past month, like, what kind of crazy whiplash are the graduates of the class of 2020 feeling right now? Because, and I said this at the top of the show, it wasn't all that long ago where the country was kind of chugging along, record low unemployment, things like that. And then all of a sudden, boom, like it's literally more than 180 degrees. Have you felt kind of a shock about that, about what your immediate future might look like?
Oh, of course. In the headlines, even before all this happened, I've seen things about the middle class flight from the city. It's just been very hard. It's been a hard life for the middle class here in the city, and in Lehman especially. Their goal is to propel students forward. And so I think it was definitely going to be hard. And then I don't want to say I clicked on the article, but I saw this Instagram post from Wall Street Journal talking about what New York City is going to look like post COVID-19 a few years from now, what the differences are going to be. And it's kind of unsettling to think about really what's going to happen in a few years' time.
Well, Jonathan, hang on for just a moment because I want to bring into the conversation Kate Brooks. She joins us from Nashville, Tennessee. She's executive director of the Career Center at Vanderbilt University. She's been in the career service field for more than 30 years. She's also the author of You Majored in What? Designing Your Path from College to Career, and the forthcoming What Color is Your Parachute for College Students? Kate Brooks, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Magna.
So you've been in this field for 30 years. We've had ups and downs during that time, but have you ever seen anything like this?
No, this is unique.
And have you had, I can only imagine how many students you've had come to you saying, what am I supposed to do now?
Right. And it is, as you said, this whiplash that's going on right now where students don't know what to expect and employers don't know what to expect. That's the hard part. There's no predicting on either of our roles.
And I think the uniqueness of this moment is, A, its scope and scale, and also its ubiquity, right? Because in the past, perhaps there have been certain sectors that have experienced really strong downturns, but others haven't. You know, maybe you could rely on going back to that waitressing job that you had before. But we don't even have that right now. So where do you begin to advise students on what to do? Coming up just in a couple of weeks from now.
Yeah. Well, I think the first thing is to take a breath, you know, take a pause, recognize that this is a very unique time, and give yourself the opportunity to express any emotions that you're feeling, whether it's disappointment or frustration or anger or fear, as Jonathan mentioned. And I think that once you can do that, you start to focus on what you can control. And what you can control is what you are doing in the market to try to find another opportunity if your opportunity went away or perhaps you hadn't landed one yet. What are the things that I can be doing right now? And that includes things like networking. It includes things like your social media profile, making sure that's representing you at your best, making sure that your resume is where it needs to be. This may be a time to build up your profile, so to speak, while you start to look for other opportunities.
My question with that, though, is there's already some evidence that, obviously new opportunities have ground to a halt. And I'm seeing a story here from CNBC, for example, that they're reporting that a quarter of employers that they reached out to are considering revoking offers that have already been made to members of the class of 2020 because of the extreme financial stress that companies are under.
And that is happening in some industries. I can tell you what we've heard from our Vanderbilt students right now is that most of them, particularly those who were looking at the banking finance area or the consulting field, what they're seeing right now is a lot of transitioning to virtual opportunities. Those who had internships are, when they can be done virtually, they're doing that. And also for offers for jobs, what they're hearing is delay, not denial yet. Just delay. We may not be starting these training classes or these new groups of employees as soon as we had hoped to do.
I see. So you heard Jonathan tell us the beginning of his story a couple of minutes ago. He's still with us. And even though I know you don't know Jonathan super well, let me introduce the two of you to each other here. Kate, do you have any initial advice for what Jonathan might do? He's in the arts world.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think for Jonathan, what I would recommend is if you haven't already done it, do a thorough self-analysis of what are your strengths and your skills and your talents and the competencies you have acquired. You've done some amazing things already. These experiences that you've had at your school and at the museum will serve you in all different career capacities. You want to really drill down to what are the basic skills that I encountered. For instance, you mentioned that you're working with students who are in kind of crisis situations. You're trying to find them funding and support. That's an amazing skill to be able to listen to people, hear their challenges, try to find solutions for them, problem solving. These are stories that you want to capture and create that you're going to be able to tell an employer when you go to an interview. You want to craft what I call your coronavirus story, the story of how you have spent your time during this period. And everything I'm hearing from you is very positive and prevailing in the midst of a lot of challenges. And that's what you want to focus on. And that's the story you want to tell.
Jonathan, does that feel doable to you right now?
It does. Thank you so much, Kate. I appreciate it. I'm fortunate enough to have, we have a career development office in Lehman as well. And so they have really great advice. And, I hope to be able to move forward with that as well.
Well, terrific.
Yeah. So Jonathan Ubi Gomez and Kate Brooks, hang on here for just a second. There's a lot more to talk about the world that the class of 2020 is stepping into now. We'll be back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour with some members of the class of 2020 and their fears and hopes as they try to launch their lives in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic. Hannah called us from Winston-Salem, North Carolina. She recently graduated from the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. And here's what Hannah says she's trying to do to land a job.
I spend lots of time poring over pretty much every job site imaginable. And I've been sending tons of cold emails to folks trying to request informational interviews so I can learn more about available opportunities and what people are up to. Everyone has been incredibly kind, super encouraging, and most people do end our calls by cheering me on, telling me something nice, and promising to let me know if they'll be able to hire for any of the positions that I'm interested in. The camaraderie is certainly reassuring, and it makes me feel hopeful knowing that there are people on the other side kind of rooting for me and willing to help recent graduates who are looking to make their mark this next year in whatever work they end up doing.
That's Hannah from Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Here's Jane. She called us from Emerald Isle, North Carolina. She was supposed to head to San Francisco after graduation for an internship in strategic communications through the Multicultural Advertising Internship Program, or MAPE. Now, the internship was canceled, but MAPE is offering online seminars throughout the summer instead.
Even though I'm extremely disappointed that the internship with RGA has been canceled due to COVID, I'm looking forward to learning new skills and making the most out of the summer. And I've really been taking advantage of LinkedIn Learning and watching training videos on Adobe Creative Suite products like Illustrator and InDesign. And if you haven't checked them out, I highly suggest you do so. They're amazing.
That's Jane from Emerald Isle, North Carolina. Well, I'm joined today by Jonathan Ubi Gomez. He's with us from New York City. He's graduating in just a couple of days from Lehman College with a BFA in Fine Arts. And Kate Brooks is also with us. She's Executive Director of the Career Center at Vanderbilt University. And Kate, respond to what you just heard there with Hannah and Jane. Lots of long hours searching and trying to find other opportunities. I mean, these are digital natives we're talking about here. I mean, might they actually be at an advantage right now in the tools that they sort of grew up using?
Absolutely. I'm really pleased to hear what they're saying, because both of them are taking positive, proactive stance in handling this situation, whether that's improving their knowledge and their skills by signing up for online classes and things for free, like what's in LinkedIn or what's in Udemy and other places, or whether they're building their networks. Things like when, I think it was Jane who mentioned that she had lost her internship for the moment, but she's staying in touch with the people that originally wanted to hire her. And that's so important, is not to burn your bridges. Don't get, even though I know you're angry or upset that something gets canceled, you want to still thank them for having considered you in the first place and making that offer in the first place, and keep that person and those persons you connected with during the interview process in your network. Keep going back to them, letting them know how you're spending your time, what you're doing, that you're still interested and want to reconnect if that becomes a possibility in the future. Remember, this is a medical crisis. This has become a financial crisis, but it didn't start that way. When the medical area gets controlled, a lot of these other opportunities will return.
We hope. And I think it's right to want to be optimistic about that. But as a reality check, Kate, I think there is also some evidence, or perhaps it's wise to maintain a certain sense of realism about how long that economic bouncing back might take. And so in the interim, whether it's 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, there are, as you know, there are many, many college grads or soon-to-be grads out there who need to keep a roof over their heads, who may not be able to may not have other housing options, for example. I mean, would you advise them at this moment to basically just take whatever they can get?
I would advise them to work if they can, to find paying employment. I'm the daughter of parents who lived through the Depression, so I grew up with a very strong work ethic in my family. And I think all work is noble, and you take the job you need to take for whatever your circumstances are. And so if you must earn money right now, you look for creative ways to do that, whether that's through a traditional employer or whether it's through using your talents and skills to build your own business. I know of one student, not a Vanderbilt student, another school, who loves to play chess, and he has turned his love of chess into developing online training that he offers to parents whose children are at home from schools right now and are perfectly happy to hire him for an hour at a time to teach their children how to play chess. And so I think you have to go back to yourself and, what are my strengths? What are my skills? How can I apply them in today's crazy workplace?
I honestly, as the parent of younger children, I can tell you there is an extreme hunger for tutoring of any kind out there right now with a lot of smart college grads available. Maybe that is actually a great potential opportunity. But what I hear you saying, Kate, is to be creative as well.
Yes.
Did we see that kind of creativity after 08? Because grads of the class of 2008 also graduated into what became the Great Recession.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think those are the people who do the best, is the ones who can pivot, the ones who are flexible, who say, it's okay to go to plan B right now. I get it. I wanted plan A. But, you know, you have to adapt to the circumstances. And that's what a lot of folks did in 2008. And now I hear stories from alumni who say things like, well, you know, my original plan in 2008, 2009 was to go into finance or go into this field. That was totally closed. So I went into this other field. I figured I'd stay a year or two. And then when things opened up, I'd go back. But you know what? I love this other field. I never went back. And so I think it's this ability to pivot and to be creative and use your talents, because your talents can work in a lot of different industries. Mm. You yourself have an engineering background. I don't know, when you were a freshman in college, if you were saying, gee, you know, in X number of years, I'm going to be hosting an NPR program. You know, we all have those, you know, this is why I love chaos theory as a metaphor for careers, because it's complex and it warns you not to try to make too many predictions of where things will be.
You did your homework, Kate.
I did.
I've been outed as an engineer here. My personal reckoning came in grad school, in roughly 2001. So you're right. I didn't grow up thinking, I'm going to be a journalist. But yet here I am and happy that I did make the pivot. So Kate and Jonathan, hang on here for a second. Let's bring a couple of other folks now into the conversation. Alexis Brown joins us from Wyandotte, Michigan. Alexis graduated on April 30th from Wayne State University with a degree in sociology and urban studies. Alexis, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. And also with us today is Candace Jones. She's joining us from Chattanooga, Tennessee. She graduated from Chattanooga State Community College just this month with an Associate of Applied Science degree in Paralegal Studies. Candace, welcome to you.
Hello.
And by the way, congratulations, Candace and Alexis, on your graduation. No matter what world you're graduating into, it is still a remarkable accomplishment. So hats off to both of you. Alexis, though, take us back in time. I want to ask both of you the same question that I started off with Jonathan. 5-6 months ago, what was your dream scenario that you were looking forward to come May, June?
So like you said, I graduated, April 30th. So, first of all, the dream was to walk across the stage on April 30th. That was the goal. That was the plan. And then I really wanted to get an internship with Detroit. Like I said, I graduated in urban studies. So I wanted to get, an internship in like their planning department or one of their departments. And then eventually get, you know, a job with the city of Detroit. So that was the dream. But you know, with the pandemic, things didn't really go as planned.
And so what are you going to do now?
So I have been working at UPrep Elementary. Ellen Thompson is elementary in Detroit. I've been working as a paraprofessional there. And during this pandemic, you know, with schools closing, we've moved to online. So I've been working with them online. And right now the plan is to maybe stay with them, which wasn't the initial plan, but maybe stay with them as a paraprofessional or get a more permanent teaching job.
I see. So, and Candace, then, same question to you. What was your dream at the beginning of 2020?
My dream plan was definitely to just get into my major of paralegal studies upon graduation and walking across the stage, of course, which, by the way, that's in August, which I'm definitely looking forward to. It's on August 1st. And definitely looking forward to that. But yeah, that was my dream plan, which is to become this paralegal, helping people out, learning the legal world. Yeah.
Okay. And is that panning out for you, or have you had to pivot, as Kate was talking about earlier?
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely going back to what Kate said, definitely had to pivot. Just understanding, just looking into my, you know, closet and just seeing like strengths, weaknesses, and what talents do I possess to adapt to this time, definitely.
And so how has that gone so far? Like, where have you looked to apply those talents, and has it borne any fruit for you?
It's just at this point, resume crafting and currently finding employment, and just between that, just going back and forth between those two things.
Okay. So I want to ask our three grads here, I want to ask all of you a little bit more about how, you know, the totality of the impact that the pandemic has had, if it's had an impact on you or your loved ones. And because that, you know, like I want to get a better sense of the world that you're really entering here. So, Jonathan, let me turn back to you. I mean, where are you living right now? Where do you think you'll be living this summer? Is that situation stable?
Yeah, I'm very fortunate. I'm in a stable situation as far as housing at the moment. I live with my fiance in Inwood at the very northern tip of Manhattan. I plan on staying here. We just moved in January. Okay. So thankfully we got in right before all this happened. And yeah, I plan on staying here.
Okay. And then since you're working at Campus Life at Lehman College, you're able to make ends meet?
Yes. Between both of our salaries, we're able to pay our bills. We had a wedding planned next week, the day after I graduated, and that's been put on hold. So for now, everything is we're at least floating. Our heads are above water, and hopefully we stay that way over the next few months while everything pans out.
Okay. And Alexis, same question for you. Is your housing situation stable at the moment?
Just like Jonathan, I'm actually fortunate to have stable housing right now. Okay. Me and my partner, we actually just moved a month ago into our new place in Wyandotte, and we both are still currently working and getting paid, so we're able to pay our bills.
Okay, good. And Candace, what about you?
It's a very stable environment. I'm living with my currently living with my mom, my stepdad, and I'm very fortunate. I've actually been living with them since my college journey at Chet State, and they've been really awesome. And I think even during this time, like, we've gotten more closer, so it's awesome.
and has the pandemic had an impact on your family financially or health-wise or other, or is everyone okay?
Everyone's okay, thank goodness. I think just taking it one day at a time, financial-wise, my mother is currently working as we speak right now, so we're just taking it one day at a time, and I'm planning on trying to help her too as well.
Mm, okay. And how long are any of you worried? I'll just throw this question out to all three of you, and whoever feels like jumping in, go ahead. But are any of you worried about the possibility that the economic impact might last for quite a while? I mean, you could get through the summer, but what if it keeps churning on in the fall? I mean, there's no guarantee that we're going to just turn the economy back on like flipping a switch of a light.
It's definitely a possibility that if this goes on, things could get worse economically for myself. Thankfully, my fiance has a really stable job. With the pandemic, her company is selling equipment, personal equipment to handle the situation. So they're doing really well. My position at the university ends in July. So after July is when I have to buckle down. I'm looking for employment to figure out the situation. So.
Mm. Sorry, we lost you for a second there. So you said Jonathan, you said your current position ends in July. So you're looking for something to pick up right after that?
Yeah, yeah, I'm looking for something to pick up right after that. I've been doing some seminars through the Career Exploration office. They partnered with the NewYork.gov, and there is an online seminar of how to get hired from the city. So I've been doing some of those. So I definitely have a time clock on me. I have until July to hopefully land something.
Okay. And Alexis and Candace, just wanted to hear quickly from both of you on that. Are you concerned about the long-term impacts you might be facing?
Yes, I'm definitely concerned about the long-term effects. I'm supposed to I am starting grad school in September, and they're talking about, you know, our classes may still be remote, even though, you know, classes start in the fall. So that makes me think about the economy, and that if we can't even start classes face-to-face, people might not be able to get to work face-to-face, and the economy won't start moving the way that it was. So that's kind of nerve-wracking.
Yeah. And Candace, what about you?
Yeah, definitely. What Alexis said, like, I'm very concerned if this is long term. I mean, like you said, we can we can adapt like as long as we can. But it's scary. It's really scary. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like just, I think for me, of course, it's just looking for jobs, looking for ways to adapt, just ways to also like work, but also like follow my dreams at the same time as well.
Yeah.
Like just having that realism and then also just having these dreams too.
Yeah. So Kate, let me ask you, this is, I completely hear what Candace is saying, right? Because as you ideally, this doesn't work out for everyone, but ideally as you graduate from college, it is the moment for you to launch yourself in the direction of your dreams. Is that what people should still have their eye on? Or should they, I mean, I think you were talking about people being much more flexible earlier. Can they do both at the same time?
Absolutely. I think that you have to do whatever the current situation requires you to do. If that involves earning money at a job you might not otherwise take. But at the same time, you keep moving toward whatever that vision is, whatever that dream is, whether that's graduate school as the way to achieve that, or whether it's volunteering or other ways that you can keep whatever the interest you have alive while you wait for a certain time when some of this stuff starts to open up again. I have an exercise I do with our students called Possible Lives, where we just write down on a piece of paper all the different careers and ideas you've had over the past few years, maybe even going back to kindergarten when you wanted to be a firefighter because you went to the fire station. And then we look at how one gets to those different careers.
Hmm. Well, Kate Brooks and Candace Jones, Alexis Brown and Jonathan Ubi Gomez, hang on here for just a moment. We'll be back. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Tomorrow on the show, we're going to be talking about whether or not economies can fully reopen if workers don't have childcare for their kids, because there are millions of parents, millions of essential workers, or folks who really want to get back to business, but they can't because their kids aren't in school or they don't have child care. So is that you? What has it been like for your family with daycare centers closed? Are you concerned about child care facilities being able to safely reopen? Are you feeling pressure from your employer, or maybe even your own financial pressure because you need that income coming from going back to work, but you can't do it because you don't know what's going to happen with your kids? Call us at 617-353-0683. That's 617-353-0683. We're going to take a close look at how returning to work and having quality childcare are so tightly bound together in the midst of this pandemic. That's for tomorrow's show. Today, we are talking with members of the class of 2020 and also with a terrific career advisor from Vanderbilt University about this world that the class of 2020 is graduating into. And by the way, when we put out a call for On Point listeners to share their stories about graduation, we actually received several from members of an earlier class that graduated into a recession, yes, back in 2008. Here's listener Cody in New Orleans. He graduated from high school in 2008 and went straight to the Navy. And after serving in the Navy, he enrolled in college for an engineering degree, and he graduated this month.
It's kind of like jumping out of a frying pot into the fire. Because a lot of people my age in their early 30s dealt with a 2008 crisis. Now we're dealing with this extra disproportionate economic instability. And I'm lucky enough to have a skill set and a marketable degree to be lucrative going forward. But I worry about my generation and Gen Z's coming after me that there's going to be a lot of economic instability to come.
That's Cody from New Orleans. And here's what Allison told us. She's in Portland, Maine.
I graduated from college in 2009 during the Great Recession. And now I'm graduating from law school in 2020, looking at this very stark economic future. And I'm wondering if there are any lessons that we learned from the Great Recession and what kind of plans there might be being formulated or ideas out there about how to protect another whole generation of graduates from ending up with worse economic outcomes and worse career outcomes because of these financial situations.
That's Allison in Portland, Maine. And I'm joined today by Kate Brooks. She's with us from Nashville, Tennessee. She's executive director of the Career Center at Vanderbilt University and author of You Majored in What? Designing Your Path from College to Career, and author of the forthcoming What Color is Your Parachute for College Students. And Kate, I wonder if you want to, if you have an answer to Allison's question there about what to do to protect graduates right now from the long-term economic setbacks that they may be facing.
Well, I think, again, it goes back to this flexibility and the ability to look at other opportunities, to not get fixated on whatever the plan might have been before the whatever economic crisis hit. I think another thing that I see now that was prevalent in 2008, but not as much, is very much an entrepreneurial mindset on the part of current college students. Most college students that I have worked with, you know, they look at employers and they look at kind of traditional employment, but they are also thinking entrepreneurially and what app can I develop or what service can I do or how can I sort of create my own lifestyle slash working situation. And I think that kind of mindset is going to serve this generation very well because we have more opportunities with the internet and with, you know, everybody has started to work virtually. We're going to see an explosion, I believe, in virtual employment and opportunities. Parker Dewey, for instance, offers these brokers micro internships that students can take advantage of. Contact Parker Dewey and see what kinds of projects and things they have that you can do virtually right now for a fixed fee and a way to build up experience and be entrepreneurial at the same time.
Hmm. Is there, do grads in the class of 2020 have a special challenge in front of them in that I keep thinking of the 36 million Americans who have lost their jobs in the past couple of months. They too, as the economy claws back, are going to be returning or wanting to return to work. So there's going to be a lot of competition out there.
There will be. And this always happens when you see the economy start to improve and people get back into the market. You do have this kind of competition between the recent grads and those with experience. And, you know, in theory, they are looking at slightly different positions. You know, the recent grads are looking at more entry level. The people with experience are looking for more intermediate. So it's really going to depend on which jobs come back the quickest. That's the market that will succeed.
I see. Well, Candace, Alexis, and Jonathan, I'm curious. Do you have a sense as to student loans might be in abeyance right now, and especially since you haven't yet fully graduated. Are you concerned about when, as and when those student loans start coming due, that's going to be an additional burden on you if you've got them? I mean, Alexis, let me start with you on that.
I think yes. Student loans definitely are going to be an added stress. Already, you know, I'm not struggling, but, you know, with the economy and with the pandemic, I think the added loans when that comes in is going to add stress.
Okay. And do you have any sense as to what you might do if No, I was going to say if work doesn't come through for you, but let's stay positive here, okay? So, Candace, what about you? I don't know if you've got any student loans that you might have to start thinking about in the next 3 to 6 months.
But I have heard about stories about student loans, and it's very scary. I mean, interest rates and things of that nature. I don't have student loans.
Okay, good. But fortunately.
Yeah.
And Jonathan, same question to you. And the reason why I'm asking all three of you is because, you know, you have to make a lot of difficult decisions today to definitely get by day to day, week to week. But at the same time, you know, sort of launching your lives out a couple of months from now, I'm just wondering how you're thinking about that next phase in your life, Jonathan. So are student loans going to be a part of the picture for you?
They will. Thankfully, I have less than the national average on student loans. But I think the saying is only death and taxes are certain, but I think they should add student loans into that phrase. So I'll have student loans. It's not too much, but it's just going to be there for a while, and I'll pay hopefully the minimum necessary to pay until I can land on my feet, get a job that permits me to pay more than the minimum and pay it off quickly.
Yeah. You know, I hear in all of you wonderful energy, realism, but also a deep desire to do whatever it takes to succeed even in this environment. And that's fantastic. And I mean, I laud all of you. At the same time, you know, we've been talking for several years about the fact that college students entering the world in this generation, at least, you know, already had that fear that maybe they wouldn't be able to do as well as previous generations in their families had. I'm just wondering, did any of you have that concern, or were you feeling more positive as it was, Jonathan?
Well, I definitely feel positive. I come from a family of immigrants. My mother was 3 of 10 children that came here to the United States with almost nothing. And through decades of hard work, she gave my brother and myself the opportunity to graduate college now. My brother's a professional here in New York. And so I think, you know, as long as I truly enjoy what I do, whatever it is that I do, and I work at it well, I'm gonna be happy. And there's always that possibility of a fear, but I, you know, just work hard and make sure to push through. It's gonna be all right in the end, I suppose.
Yeah, keep pushing. I love that. Alexis, what about you?
I was not fearful. My mother and father both push education, how important education is and how education can really take you to where you want to go. So I didn't have any fear within. I believe that, you know, whatever I put my mind to, whatever I do, I can achieve.
Great. I love that. And Candace?
No, really general fear. My mother, like Alexis, instilled hard work in me as well. Just understanding and learning, like, and even going back to what Jonathan said, like learning to love what you do at what you're doing, and just working off of that, especially with my major in paralegal studies.
Yeah. You know, Kate Brooks, I am so glad that these three members of the class of 2020 are with us, because they're the antidote that this old cynic needs for the world we're living in right now. I mean, it seems like they all have the right perspective.
And that's what I hear a lot from my students as well. I mean, one of the advantages of being a college student or a recent graduate is you have this potential gold mine at your university called a career center. And the career center, you know, our center at Vanderbilt, the minute we had to all go home, we just pivoted and became a virtual center. All of our students get appointments virtually now through Zoom or whatever. And most career centers have done the same thing. In fact, I think about 98%, if I read the data right. And so being able to reconnect with your career center, make sure you stay in touch, make sure that you are using the database. We're still posting jobs constantly on our database. My employer relations team is reaching out to employers and finding out where the opportunities are, and we're posting them. There are services on your career center website that you might not have used before, but this is the time to really tap into that wonderful potential gift that every college student has.
Well, Kate Brooks is executive director of the Career Center at Vanderbilt University and author of the forthcoming What Color Is Your Parachute for College Students. Kate Brooks, thank you so very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Candace Jones, who graduated from Chattanooga State Community College. Candace, thank you and good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
Alexis Brown, a graduate of Wayne State University, thank you as well and best of luck.
Thank you so much.
And Jonathan Yubi Gomez, who's graduating from Lehman College later this month. Jonathan, it was great to have you, and thank you.
Thank you, Meghna.
All right, let's shift gears a little bit here, because maybe you've seen them before, especially if you live in a rural part of the country. A private vehicle that's someone's regular car, except it's got a little sign on it that says U.S. Mail.
I'm driving in the passenger seat. I'm not in the driver's seat. I'm somewhat straddling the console area, driving from the right hand, because all postal boxes are on the right hand delivery.
Meet Lynn Norton. She's a substitute rural postal carrier in Plattsmouth, Nebraska. At least once a week, Lynn accomplishes that rather amazing feat of crisscrossing more than 90 miles of cornfields and hills by driving with her left hand and foot while popping the post into mailboxes on her right side. She talked to us about what it means to her to deliver mail to rural Nebraskans for the USPS.
There is still a huge rural part of America that really relies on the Postal Service to get their things out there. And even Amazon. Trump keeps saying all this stuff about how Amazon's in partnership with the USPS, but when Amazon doesn't want to go that last distance to get something out there, it comes to the Postal Service. And some of the things we've been hauling out to these rural areas are not things that we used to haul out when I worked for them before. It's just like, whoa, that's huge. I'll never get that in my car. When we're delivering the mail now, is so many more people. Usually when we deliver the mail during the week, everyone's at work, kids are at school, and we're sort of out doing this every single day, and people start to kind of equate us as, you know, a light pole or a telephone pole. You're there, but you're not really seen. So now that people are there, when we're out doing the mail and they're there all the time, you have people just, oh, it's the postal person, and they just start coming right up to the car, and we're having to get them to stop. And if they have mail, you know, we're like, put the mail in the mailbox. I will get it from there. I'll put my mail in and you can get your mail that way, but don't just hand it to me. Coming in as a sub to the Postal Service, I make $18+ an hour. There's no way I'm going to make $18+ an hour if it gets privatized. And I don't think people really understand that even though the Postal Service is United States Postal Service, it does not get funded by taxpayer dollars. It is responsible to make its own money. The Postal Service, for many people, is a trusted constant that they can rely on. This pandemic has put the Postal Service even into more of a crisis than it was before. You know, people are going to get worried. There's going to be stress. Can I get my medications? How will I get these things? What's the cost? So I think, like a lot of things that are happening with this pandemic and pulling the curtains back on the inequity of what is happening in the United States, if that is what was normal, I don't want to go back to that as normal. I'm ready for a new normal. The positive thing I'd like to see out of this pandemic is that it exposes the things that are wrong, and it helps us start to change those things.
Lynn Norton is a substitute rural carrier associate in Plattsmouth, Nebraska. Well, tomorrow we will be talking about the idea of privatizing the United States Postal Service. Are you a postal worker anywhere in the United States? What do you think about the possibility of the USPS going private? What are you seeing on your delivery routes in your community? And for folks out there who think that privatization has some benefits for the United States Postal Service, What do you think they are? And what do you think we might get through privatizing this 250-year-old federal agency? Give us a call at 617-353-0683. That's 617-353-0683. We'll be talking about the USPS tomorrow on the show. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices, and they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons, and there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.